Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Know-How is brought to you by Carbonite. Automatically and continually backup your computer files to the cloud whenever your computer is connected to the internet. Only $59 a year, Mac or PC. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code KNOWHOW to get 2 bonus months with purchase.
Today, Russell Tammany is here, and today you'll know how to expand your wireless network. Welcome to Know How. This is Twit's How To Show. And if you looked at that intro and you're like, hey, I recognize that Ayaz Akhtar guy. He's got a lower third. But that fellow does not look like Leo Laporte unless you have really poor eyesight. This is Russell Tammany.
Yes.
You might have heard of Russell because he's always constantly mentioned in our Ring Central ads because he's our networking genius. Russell, how's it going?
Going good. So, we're going to show you how to do your client bridge thing here.
But. Yeah, we're going to do our client bridge thing. But so what we're going to do, we're going to go from a really big example where Russell went out and he had a job to do. He took this big piece of property and connected it all wirelessly. And what after we show you this fantastic shoot we got to do at this winery, we'll show you how you can expand your wireless network in your house using much cheaper equipment, and you won't even have to hire Russell. It's very, very expensive, but very, very good. So you're going to get his information for free. Let's take a look at that footage. We're at Alexander Valley Vineyards, and we're with Russell, who's actually set up this entire property with Wi-Fi. We're talking about 3 buildings connected. How on earth do you begin to even do that?
Yes, well, let's go take a look. So we got our center building, which is the main office building. That's where our internet connections come in. And then we've got the White House over on the left that we need to connect. And then also this red house over on the right that we need to connect. So we're going to link all 3 of these buildings together with Wi-Fi.
So we're at the main winery building. This is the one that's actually connected to the local ISP, and this is where we want everything to start off, right?
Correct.
It's all set up with Wi-Fi? I mean, how could that even work? Because we're talking about great distances.
Right. So we have a network and internet connection all here in the main winery building, but we need to connect it out to the red house over here, for example. So regularly with Wi-Fi, you can set up your access point, but you can't really work too far away from it, maybe 100, 150 feet. So what we do to get around that is we put in a directional Wi-Fi antenna. And a directional Wi-Fi antenna allows us to concentrate that signal and direct it at the building that we want to use it in.
So that's going to help us with different speeds. So what's the internet connection like here?
Well, the internet connection here, because we're out in Alexander Valley, is T1 only. So the only wired options are 1.5 megabit T1 lines. So we have 2 of those in this building. It's not very fast. It's a lot slower than your typical cable or DSL connection. But we still need to get them connected at these other buildings where there's no internet available from any service provider.
Well, there's also a local intranet, so they have their own network. They're getting much faster speeds than 1.5, right?
Correct.
So you got a directional Wi-Fi antenna up there. But Russell, how do you even know where to start? Where would you even put that when you're deciding where it goes?
Right. So one of the most important things when you're putting in wireless on a multi-site kind of property is to do a wireless survey. Before you're, you know, screwing something into the side of the building and running cable to it, you want to make sure that it's actually going to work and provide the signal strength and quality that you were looking for. One of the ways we do that is we just set up a wireless radio with a directional antenna on a little battery pack. And we plug it all in, and then we go to the other location, do the same thing, and we point them back at each other, and then test with laptops to make sure that the connection is good and the signal strength is strong before we actually install it on the building.
So no wild guessing. You're not just like looking through the window like, I can kind of see it over there. You probably want to use proper tools for this. We should actually show those proper tools in action.
Right. Once we put the radio on one side and point it in the direction of the building that we want to connect to, we come back over to that building and using a mini directional antenna and a Wi-Spy analyzer or another USB Wi-Fi adapter, we can then come over and check the signal strength from the radio that's on the other side and make sure that the signal strength is good enough to have a secure connection. So right here, if I point this over at our unit, we're well above negative 40 dBm amplitude. So that's a very high signal strength. So you'll basically be connecting at full speed over this short distance. So once we know we've got a good wireless signal here on this side of the building, we can go and install the directional Wi-Fi antenna. And this antenna is routed to the inside of the building, where we actually have the radio unit connected to it through one of the antenna ports.
All right, Russell, let's talk a little bit about the hardware. Now, we have these devices attached to the outside of these houses, but what exactly are we using to make this connection possible?
Okay, so what we're doing is we're using something called a client bridge. And what a client bridge is you configure the radio so that the Ethernet coming in on one side is bridged to the radio on the other side. So it's essentially like stringing a long wired cable between the buildings. Now, one of the reasons that we do this is because we've turned the power up and put in a directional antenna. And what that means is that if you have it on your regular wireless network, an iPhone or a laptop that's all the way out in the fields out there will actually see that wireless network with a very strong signal strength.
So the problem, though, is that once it can actually get that signal, though, it won't be able to connect to it because this laptop, there's no way on earth it can send out a signal that far, right?
Correct. So without an actual directional antenna and maybe a radio amplifier, a laptop can't talk directly back to it.
So that's why you have these two client bridges set up. Now, when using client bridges, are you seeing any speed hits? Because, I mean, if you have a repeater, that usually halves the throughput. What about in this case?
Right. So in client bridge mode, you're basically getting the full speed of the wireless network on the other end. So WDS is another style, and WDS, each relay point, you lose half the bandwidth.
What does WDS stand for?
WDS stands for Wireless Distribution System.
Okay.
And it's another method of connecting multiple access points to make a mesh network. It's great when you have one or two hot points, but for long distances and for high-powered radios, WDS can cause problems for clients connecting back because they're going to try to connect to a radio that's a lot stronger than they can send to.
So essentially, like you said before, this is like effectively a wireless cable.
It's a wireless cable,
it's one connection, one-to-one.
Right.
You're not going to accidentally pick up signals.
What it means when it's in client bridge mode is that we hide the SSID, or the name of the network, so that nobody sees it and nobody tries to connect to it. And then that way, what we still have to do is put a wireless access point on both the inside of the other building and the inside of this building. So even though we're using Wi-Fi, you actually cannot connect to that Wi-Fi from your iPhone or from your laptop or anything else. It's simply used to get the signal back and forth.
Now, how far a distance do you think these buildings are?
These buildings are about a quarter mile. We, with this equipment, have no problem doing 2 miles.
We've gone up to 2 miles with this kind of thing?
Yes.
And this is just using Wi-Fi.
This is just using Wi-Fi.
We're going to get back to Russell and Iaz out there at the winery. Some people get the best assignments, I got to tell you. But before we go on, I got to talk about backing up your data with Carbonite, which is World Backup Day, you know, on the last day of March. We got to do something to raise the awareness. You know about backup, right? It's a very important thing to do. I'm sure if you look at what's on your laptop or your desktop or both, you've got important stuff there, financial records, baby pictures, music, whatever it is that's on here. In many cases, it's stuff that you would go crazy if you lost, right? You would just think about what would you do if your data were gone? Well, here's the bad news. That hard drive's going to fail. You're going to leave that laptop on the conveyor belt at the airport. Hundreds of thousands of people do every year. One of these days, you're going to be saying, oh, man, where's the backup? Now, with Carbonite, you never have to ask that question. Carbonite's always backing up whenever you're online, automatically, continuously, and when you need to, you can get your data. You don't even have to wait for a disaster. You can log on to your Carbonite account on any computer. You can. They have free smartphone and tablet apps. There's your stuff. You can download it, play with it. It's cloud storage. But if the worst happens, if you lose that device, I had somebody call me on the radio show, had a laptop on the deck of his sailboat. He was sailing to Catalina Island. A wave came up. The laptop went right overboard. And he said, you know, I was bad enough losing the laptop. Thank goodness I didn't lose my data because I had Carbonite. Mac or PC, Carbonite is just plain old peace of mind. And, you know, because it costs less than $5 a month for everything on your computer, even if nothing bad ever happens, at least, you know, you've got it backed up. And it's a very affordable way to do it. In fact, it's the least expensive cloud storage option I know. I want you to try Carbonite free for 2 weeks. See how it works. Does not slow you down. Does not slow your internet down. Carbonite.com. You don't need a credit card. Just use our offer code, KnowHow, and you can try it free for 2 weeks. And if you decide to buy, you'll get 14 months for the price of 12. Carbonite.com. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right. Better do it right now. Do it right now with Carbonite. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code KNOWHOW. Now let's get back out to the winery and see how Russell and Iaz are doing.
So we're at this white building here, and we can see on the top right we have a radio and we have our antenna, and this is getting a signal from all the way across through these trees. What kind of problems do you have when you have, actual objects in the way of your two antennas?
Right, so actual objects in the way can drastically reduce your signal strength. So where in open air, you can go 2 to 5 miles with this type of directional Wi-Fi antenna setup. When you start to put obstacles in the way, there's really no good calculation for, how much signal strength am I going to lose. So what you have to do is, as part of the survey, is just get on the roof with the battery pack and the laptop and check it out with the actual antenna. So we went up there and tried this corner of the building, we tried the other corner of the building, and we tried on the main center spire on the roof to try to find which position had the least amount of signal loss.
So by picking this particular location, you were able to get the fastest connection.
Correct.
So we've got no line, well, not really a line of sight, but we have enough signals, signal strength that we could do this. What was your alternative? A crazy pole or something in the middle of the property?
Right. So the alternative would be to find a location that both locations could see. And so we found one of the power poles that both locations can see clearly, and we could buy another pair of radios and do a relay on that pole. However, it's a lot more expensive, so we were basically trying to find, can we get 70-something megabit plus by going on this building with one set of antennas?
Now, this building's different because the radio's on the outside. Every other one, when we looked at the other buildings, we just saw that one antenna. But there's something to the right. That's the radio. Why is that out here?
Right. So that radio is out here because we wanted to keep the antenna cable as short as possible. So when we bought the Wi-Fi radios to use as bridges, we bought outdoor-capable models. So these are rated to be mounted outdoors. It costs a little bit more, but it gives you more flexibility in where you're going to put your antenna.
So the longer the cable, the more attenuation, so you'd have a weaker signal. So that's why you want a really short cable, right?
Right. So you want as short a cable as possible, or you'll be losing some of that signal strength. And particularly in this scenario where we were worried about our signal strength going through all these obstacles, we needed to just keep it as short as possible.
So, Russell, you've connected these three buildings. They're really far apart. How is that working out for this place?
Oh, it's been working great. So we set this up about 6 months ago. And we've been getting great throughput through the radios, about 75 megabit.
With 75 megabits per second?
Yes.
That far apart?
Absolutely.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's great. So they've been very reliable, no issues outdoors when you're using the proper outdoor access points and outdoor antennas. And it's very reliable, and you should be able to do it at home.
And you don't want to just use any old router or any old thing out there. You've got specialized outdoor things because there's obviously seasonal changes out here.
Yeah, so companies like Ubiquiti and Ingenious both make affordable outdoor gear that you can use in business or home environments.
All right, Russell, that's fine and good if you own a winery. What if you got this on a smaller scale, like a house or something?
Right, so let's go back to the studio and we'll show you how you can do this in your own house.
Now, Russell, what did that install cost? I mean, people are like, why don't you just trench everything? Why don't you put cables in? You did a wireless setup, but what did that thing cost?
So per side, it's about $250.
Okay.
So that was for the Ingenious access point, which is an outdoor-rated access point, and it's for a outdoor-rated Hawking directional antenna, and a couple associated little mounting hardware for that.
Well, let's actually do this for a house. Okay, so I know there are a lot of locations in your house where you're like, okay, I don't have enough wireless signal to get from my router over all the way to my living room, or sometimes they're dead spots because when it comes to antenna that are on routers, they're omnidirectional, so it's not necessarily sending the direction where you want it. But we can set up something called a client bridge where we can take two, we're going to use routers because they're much cheaper than buying actual dedicated bridges. What did you have to do first to make this happen?
Okay, so what we had to do is start with two access points that support DDWRT. There's literally hundreds of different models that can support DDWRT.
Now, we did an episode about how to put DDWRT on your router. It's available at twit.tv/KH. We'll have a link in the show notes if you want to take a look at that. So once you figure that out, once you put DDWRT on your routers, then what do you do?
Right. So we're assuming you're starting with DDWRT. And first, just, as a reason to do the client bridge is that you can do a repeater. But a repeater, you're going to lose that speed, as we mentioned earlier.
Right, so a repeater will take that signal, and it's halving the speed.
Correct.
So you lose half of the speed just because you're doing a repeater.
Right, so if you have a location that You know, like the cable comes into the second bedroom. You have a media center out in the mm-hmm. living room. You want to put one of these out there and use another Wi-Fi channel to create a high-speed link between those places that you're not actually using for your actual Wi-Fi. So you are essentially using it as a bridge or a wireless cable.
So like if you had a bunch of game systems, a Roku, all these things in your living room, you could actually have a nice wired connection. You don't need to have Wi-Fi dongles for each device or any of that stuff. So you would just have one of these probably by your media center, one of these by your actual modem.
Right.
So what are the settings like when it comes to DDWRT?
Okay, so assuming you have DDWRT on your device, what you're going to want to do is take a laptop and connect it directly to the ports on it.
Okay.
So I'm plugging my laptop into here. And then you can pull my screen up here. And one of the things you're going to want to do when you're configuring any wireless router or DDWRT is to go in and set up a static IP address for your laptop.
What happens if you don't put a static IP address?
If you don't put a static IP address, you'll plug in, and the default for DDWRT is to give you a 192.168.1 address.
Mm-hmm.
That's because it's running a DHCP server. One of the first things you're going to want to do is turn off that DHCP server, and you're going to have multiple routers that you're going to want to connect to and have to reconfigure them from their default IP to the IP that you want them on.
That's because that D stands for dynamic and,
right.
and DHCP. So what's going to happen is you might have a different address and you might not be able to connect properly. So you want to set a static IP address
right.
on your device. We'll have links for OS 10 how to do that, links how to do that for Windows as well at mm-hmm. twit.tv/kh. So once you've set up a static IP address.
So I'm going to go in here and I'm going to pick 192.168.1.3 because it's not currently in use by your main router or any other device on my network. This is all you need. You don't need to fill out the default gateway or DNS because all you're going to do is use this to connect and initially provision these devices.
Okay.
So I'm going to give myself my 192.168.1.3 and then pull up my browser here.
I mean, all these routers have browser-based interfaces, so we're going to go into our router with
right.
Was it 192.168?
Yeah, so we're going to go 192.168.1.1 and I've already changed this one to 251, but we're gonna come in here on 251.
So right now, this is the standard DDWRT.
This is the standard DDWRT. So what you're going to do is log into the device that's going to be your main device. And you're going to want to change your WAN connection type from the automatic mode to disabled. And then you should give it a name that reminds you what it is. So I put in client bridge local. And you're going to come down here to local IP address. And you're going to put it on an IP address that's in your network that's not in your DHCP range. So you want to look at your main router and find out what your main router is giving out and make sure you don't put it on one that interferes with another device on your network. So we're giving out .1 to .199.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've chosen 251.
So your second device, the one that's going to be your client bridge, is outside of the range of the IP addresses
of your
router's
main router.
Giving
out. So we're assuming that you're going to have a main router. You're going to attach this to your main router or your main wired network.
Okay.
And then you're going to use these devices to bridge it to another location.
Okay.
But it's not actually going to be your internet router. It's solely used for a bridge. So you want to make sure it doesn't interfere with that. So you come in here and you give it a 192.168.1.251. And so this is going to be our main client bridge local device that will be physically attached to your network. You can also give it your gateway address and DNS so that this router has access.
So should they match these numbers? Everything should match with the original router so that way they can talk?
This needs to be different.
Okay.
So you need to have your main client bridge, your secondary client bridge, and your main home router that you currently have all need their own IP addresses. So that they can be seen on the network and you can connect and administer them.
All right, good. So we've got that set up.
So you've got that set up. The other thing you'll need to do is come in here and choose DHCP server and choose disable. And the reason you want to disable the DHCP server that's built into these routers is that you've already got your main internet router. It's going to hand out the DHCP addresses for you, and you want to leave it doing that. So
what happens if you leave it on?
If you leave it on, it'll hand out addresses. Sometimes you'll get the address from this unit. Sometimes you'll get an address from the other unit. And they could be different ranges, different subnets. They could overlap. It's just best practice to disable DHCP on every other device and run one per subnet.
So it'll keep everything running smoothly if you turn off DHCP on. Actually, you have a label, and this is DHCP off.
Right. I label it with the IP address and DHCP off. So then there's only a couple other settings you have to do. You have to go over to wireless. And because we've got a DDWRT router that is dual band, We've actually got both a 2.4 gigahertz interface and a 5 gigahertz interface.
You know, I've always wondered about these routers that have both. I'm like, that's great. They have 2 gigahertz so I can get a much longer distance for the range. And I've got the 5 gigahertz when I want really good speeds. But you're using this device, you're using both of the radios to set it up. So 5 gigahertz is doing one thing, 2 gigahertz. So this way we're avoiding this whole repeater problem.
Right. So you, with this device, you have the choice of using either radio for the bridge, and then you have a radio that's left over. So you can either disable that radio, or you can actually use that radio as another access point to your Wi-Fi network.
But that means we're only going to get the 2 gigahertz range when we're using our Wi-Fi devices.
So what I'm going to do at this point is switch over to a Wi-Spy spectrum analyzer. This is something that you're probably not going to have at home, but there's apps for Android and iPhone that will show you what channels are in use and you know what's available on your network.
So this is like Twit's set up with networks.
We're scanning what's going on here now.
We have a million things in here, and you probably have this. If you're in an apartment complex, you're probably going to see a whole bunch of these as well.
So we're on the 5 gigahertz band because the 2.4 gigahertz band only really has three independent channels that don't overlap, which is channel 1, 6, and 11.
Okay.
Any of the other channel choices can overlap with the neighboring channels.
And so in this actual thing that we're seeing, you can see these bars. I'm trying to get to the bars.
Right.
And that's showing how wide that channel is?
It's showing how wide the channel is.
Production there.
Right. So that's a two-channel, 40 megahertz wide channel.
So you don't want to overlap into that.
Right.
These kinds of things. Okay.
So what you want to do is you want to look into your current environment and choose a channel that is not in use by your current wireless router. So if on your main wireless router you're using, say, channel 6 on 2.4 or channel 56 on 5 gigahertz, you want to make sure that your bridge is using a different channel.
So that way it's not interfering with the other
one. It's not interfering because the point is you want to get the most speed at the other end. And then, you know, if you're picking a channel you're already using, it's going to interfere with that.
Okay, that sounds simple, but that sounds like a good point.
So what you want to do is come in here and figure out which channel you want to use. Do you want to use 2.4 or 5? That may be restrictive depending on the hardware you're using.
Okay.
So I've decided to disable the 2.4 radio for this setup
right now.
This
is in the wireless settings.
So this is under DDWRT on the main, scroll back up here. You go under wireless, and then you go to basic settings.
Okay, good.
And then so I've gone and disabled the 2.4 radio, and then I've come down here to the 5 gigahertz radio. Let me scroll this down a bit here. And I've enabled it. And so what you're going to do is the primary router, the router that's the main client bridge, that's going to be connected with a physical cable to the rest of your network, it needs to be set to the access point mode. So it's going to be a regular access point. One of the benefits of this is that now I can go in and say, this is going to be an N-only access point.
So it's going to be super fast.
So it's going to be super fast.
It's also going to take out a lot of items. If you have an old device, it's not going to work on that. So you should be thinking
about
that.
But we're not concerned about devices because the only device that's going to connect to this network is our other bridge.
Okay.
So we can pick the N-only, which lets us optimize the speed and performance for that. So I've come in here and chosen channel 153, 40 megahertz channel width, which is two channels. So that's the way to get faster connection. Is it can take the channel you're on plus the channel above or the channel below.
What are the other options then? If you have 40 megahertz, you have 20 megahertz.
You have 20 megahertz or auto. So if you've got two clear channels that are next to each other where there's not neighbors or other interference, you want to choose 40 megahertz because you get twice the performance.
Okay, sounds good so far. So we've got a lot of settings to go through. Extension channel, what does that even mean?
So extension channel means because we've got 40 megahertz, we're going to bond another channel to that. So you can either bond the next channel above it. So for 153, it would be 157. Or you can bond the channel below it, which would be 149.
Okay.
So we've chosen 153, 40 megahertz, and upper. But this is going to depend on your environment. And I think it's important to do a little survey, figure out what channels are in use in your area, and then pick the one that has the least amount of devices on it.
Some folks in the chat room were mentioning on OS X you could use iStumbler. It's nowhere near as powerful as the software Russell's using, but it is an option out there. There's a whole bunch of free pieces of software you could use to try to see what's going on in the ranges around you, because there's going to be a lot of wireless everywhere.
And a good thing to point out is that you don't want to just take a look at the wireless where the main unit's going to be placed. You want to take a look at the wireless where the receiver unit or the remote unit is going to be placed.
Makes plenty of sense.
Because if you're in that environment, you might be closer to another neighbor who's on that channel. So where you are at the primary location, that channel could look good. But then when you get to the remote location, that channel could have a strong interference or another network on it.
Okay, so what's the next thing we've got to do with our bridge here?
Okay, so what we're going to do is, this is important, we have to set the wireless name. So this is set as know-how bridge. And for the purpose of the demonstration, I've gone ahead and allowed the SSID to be broadcast so it can be seen. You can turn this off so that it's not visible to the client devices once it's set up, so it's not confusing people and they don't try to connect to it, because it's just used for this bridge.
Okay, so this is just for the router talking to the bridge.
Right.
That's all that this part is for.
Right. So now we want to make sure that there's security on it. So we go up to wireless and then wireless security.
Okay.
And then on our same interface, WL1, which is the 5 gigahertz interface, we're going to come in here and set the security. So I've set WPA2 personal, AES, which is probably the most secure that you can get without going to enterprise gear. And we'll go ahead and unmask this key here. So the super secret key that I've used is know-how shared key.
Now, everybody who's watching this has no idea what the passkey is.
Right. So what you want to do is create this password to be a little longer and to be a little more random. Mm-hmm. But this key is important, because you're going to use this key and the name of the network on your remote router to make it connect.
Okay.
So I've gone ahead and set that. There's a couple of other options. We might post a screenshot on the website of the advanced settings panel.
Yeah, by the way, guys, I know this is a very involved project, so do not fear. We will have full show notes at twit.tv/KH. Screenshots, potentially. We'll have lots of things. Everything will be written out for you.
Because we might put some graphics up or something.
This is complex, but the thing is, when you're done with this, when you're finished this whole thing, you're going to have an expanded wireless network that's a lot stronger than you're having to walk over near the router. This is a lot better. All right, so what do we do next?
So I've got a couple settings here on advanced. Now, because you're using this radio only with the other client router, we can set it to N only, and we can go in here and change the basic rate to all, which removes some of the legacy rates. We can turn off the CTS protection, which is designed for not interfering with older A and B devices.
Okay.
And then we can also turn on frame burst, which is also not compatible with certain older clients.
What is frame burst?
So frame burst allows a burst of packets that throughput the router faster and throughput the wireless radio faster without having to check certain TCP checksums and 802.11 checksums.
It's not sending as much data back and forth to do something.
It's going to send things in a larger packet or a larger burst of frames. So it's a kind of a performance improvement. So I've gone in here and done that. One of the things that you'll notice is that I've chosen a router that has removable antennas. So on this router, we can remove the antenna.
And we've got a little antenna port. A lot of routers have gotten rid of this idea.
A lot of routers have gotten rid of this. So I really like these ASUS routers, because they give you the antenna option if it has the range you need, or you've got a little antenna port here.
So you can swap out these omnidirectional.
You can swap out these omnis for a directional, and this is very easy to do in your own house. So if you've got a barn in the back that you want to get it connected to.
As we all do. We all have barns. This is California. Right. This is what we got.
So if you want to connect to your barn, you can plug a directional into this consumer router and make it all the way out there. But what's nice is you get the chance to try with the omnidirectional antenna and see if it will go far enough for your needs, and then upgrade to the directional antenna later.
Yeah, once again, definitely check if you can remove these, because not a lot of them do that anymore. Linksys used to have them all over the place, and that disappeared. So before you start ripping away the antenna, check if you can remove it.
Okay, so that's actually all the configuration that you have to do with DDWRT. So to summarize it, you want to put it on its own IP address. Mm-hmm. You want to turn off DHCP.
Okay.
You want to set up the wireless network name that you're going to use for the bridge, pick the channel that it's going to be on, and then set a WPA2 security key for it.
So at this point, that means these two devices are talking. If I wire anything into this, that'll work.
Well, we're just talking to this device now.
Right.
So we've programmed this device, and now we need to go to the remote device, place it where it's going to be, and then program that.
Okay, so how do we get to
do that? So what we're going to do is we're going to take the laptop with the existing configuration of its static IP, and we're going to take our cable, which I think is this cable.
So you're going to attach...
And we're going to go to the other room where we place this.
So this is the router that we have next to our
remote. This is the router that we have. It's completely disconnected from everything.
Right.
And so we're going to plug into one of its LAN ports, and then we're going to pull up its web page. Now, remember, it's going to be on the default 192.168.1.1 again. So you're going to want to log into that and change it to another unique address.
So we're going to go into our web interface for our router that we're attached with an actual cable. We have a device with a static IP address, same one we used to set up the bridge, but now we're back on our router. Let's see what we're going to do next.
Okay. So we're going to log into, this is the remote unit, and what you're going to do on that unit is go in and disable the WAN connection again, because we're not connecting these to the internet through the internet port at all.
Okay.
You're going to give it a name like Client Bridge Remote. We're going to give it this unique IP address, which is 252. So the main unit's 251 and the remote unit's 252. That'll allow you to pull up both web pages once they're connected on the network, look at the status and speed and see who's connected and change other settings in them. And then you don't have any other settings on the basic setup page that you need to worry about, but the DHCP will also have to be turned off. This has automatically turned it off by changing it into a client bridge mode in wireless.
Okay.
So when we go into wireless here, you'll see now on this radio that instead of AP, which is the default option, we're going to change it to client bridge. And the client bridge option is what turns this into a wireless client that will join your wireless network that you created just to make this bridge, and then basically put it onto the Ethernet ports of the other router.
Okay, so we're, what part of this is in DDWRT? This is in wireless?
This is in wireless, okay. Under basic settings. So normally this would say access point, but we're going to change it to client bridge. We've also disabled the 2.4 radio again on this side, so that we're just making a 5 gigahertz bridge and nothing else is going on. And then you want to put in the name of the network, the type of the network, so N only, and then the exact same name of the SSID.
Okay, here's where the things have to be similar. Okay,
so this has to be similar. You've got to have the SSID the same on both, and it can be hidden, and you can just type it in the exact same way.
Okay, sounds good so far.
You've set it to the same name. You want to make sure you go to wireless security now and set it to the same security code.
So we're matching this the same thing.
So you're matching the type of security, WPA2 personal, the algorithm, which is AES, and then the exact key that you put in on the first router.
You know, I've done this a number of times where I have accidentally not paid attention to the WPA, or I wrote the wrong password slightly. Go slowly, right. Go methodically, and make sure you have all this information.
I find it helpful to pull up a little notepad window on the laptop you're doing with this on and take a little note to yourself that, you know, this is the key that you use, this is the SSID that you use, and this is the IP, so that once you get to the remote location and plug in there, you don't have to keep going back and plugging it in again and trying to log into it again and then trying to look at what it was.
I have been that guy running back and forth with an Ethernet cable like, no, what was that thing? Yeah, take some screenshots or notepad.
So all you need to do is, once you set this to client bridge, put the WPA2 key in and save it, it will connect to the router. So you can come over here to the status page, and when you go under wireless and choose, make sure you choose the interface if it's a dual WAN interface. So we're choosing the 5 gigahertz interface. And we can see here at the bottom that we're connected to this access point. So this down here, a little bit further down the screen here. So this down here means that we're connected to the MAC address of the client bridge main router.
Okay, down here for access point. Okay,
and
see.
This is showing what transmit rate and receive rate and signal quality we're at. One of the reasons that this is going to show a real slow speed rate now is actually that they're very close to one another. And so they're actually overpowering each other's antennas by being this close. So it's sort of counterintuitive, but if you move them farther away, the speed will increase.
No, that makes perfect sense. The fact is, if you're trying to do this kind of setup, you wouldn't have these devices next to each other, not this close anyway, because what's the point of that? You just get an Ethernet cable. But yeah, when you separate them out, there'll be less interference, and it'll be much faster.
And so the maximum rate that you can do with this 40 megahertz, 5 gigahertz bridge here is actually 450 megabit. So you can transmit and receive it up to 450 megabit, which is four times faster than your 10100 Ethernet cable would run, basically. So you're going to create a link between one place in your house and another place in your house that has the potential of being up to 450 megabit. And then on the other end of that is where you can put another access point or the rest of your network. So essentially this is used to just get that cable over to the other area. And then you can either put another 2.4 or dual band access point in one of the jacks in this router to extend your, you know, my home Wi-Fi name that's in your main location to your secondary location. Or if you've got one of these dual band radios, you can come back into the DDWRT software, go to wireless, go to access point, and then enable an access point for your 2.4 network. And then if you name this the same as your home network, like my home network, and then set that the same and your security the same as your home network, your client devices will then roam from your main location to their secondary location.
Now, alternatively, if you weren't necessarily concerned, let's say you had a device that didn't have dual radios, you could just make it a client bridge repeater, correct?
Correct.
Because another option was in the drop-down option. What it would do is you'd have that bridge happening, the ports would still work for Ethernet, and it would get internet speed. But the downside of it is having the
speed. Downside is the performance on that remote access point. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you might need up to four routers to just have your main router and your main internet connection. You need the main client bridge router, the receiving client bridge router, and then the access point for that other location. So that could be four routers, but what you can do is you can set it into repeater.
You can double them up.
You can double them up, and if you've got the dual band access points, this can be your master router. So the client bridge main router could actually be your master router. You could use the 2.4 radio in it for your 2.4 gigahertz clients. You could use the 5 gigahertz radio in it for your client bridge. And then on this client bridge, you can use the 2.4 radio again to be an access point. So what this means is that you've got a 5 gigahertz bridge, but then you've got your 2.4 gigahertz for your client devices. And they're on completely separate channels.
Now, this we're replicating what you did at the winery. The thing is, you had those directional antennas, and you had radios there. Mm-hmm. These obviously have them all built in together.
Right.
And I'm assuming this is probably a little cheaper than setting up what you did.
Yes, this is a little cheaper. You can get dual band DDWRT compatible routers for from $100 to $179. I believe this ASUS is about $179 now.
I think I got some refurb Ciscos that had dual band, and I think they were like $50.
Yeah,
so you can get them really cheap. And the thing is, DDWRT works on a number of devices, and I mean a massive number of devices. And we'll have a link to find that too. You can get pretty much almost any router. Some of them out there, I think Buffalo, they actually come with DDWRT on there if you want to just get something that has this very powerful firmware on there. But this, some people are like, it's got to be cheaper to run a cable. You know, I've got a story for you. I had to do something like this, and I just couldn't get the speeds as fast as I wanted, and I had to actually hardwire a very long distance. I had to pull up carpet to do that. I don't recommend having to do that, especially if you're in an apartment, and if you're my landlord, I never did that. So this is a much easier way to go when it comes to having a nice connection between two devices that are far apart, because you're always going to have... There's almost always you have an issue when it comes to where your router's located,
right,
where your modem's located, and where your media is.
Right.
All over the place. So.
And this is the way to do it that doesn't slow down the rest of your Wi-Fi network. So if you want to be in that remote location and, you know, copy a file from another machine over the local network, you don't want that interfering with your wireless traffic and interrupting your Netflix in another room that's off your access point. So this lets you create that kind of, utilize the Wi-Fi bandwidth that you have in your area to kind of optimize and maximize your performance.
Good question in the chat room. What's the maximum range for the sending AP to the receiving access point?
I believe inside of the Wi-Fi technology that it works up to about 15 miles before you have to start doing some funny things with the bridging. So Ubiquiti makes some $100 to $200 radios that will exceed 15 miles, and they have special settings for that. So all you really need is the line of sight and a pole. But when you're talking about more enterprise gear, the costs go up. You have to do power over Ethernet. You know, you have to go mount the thing outside, make sure you have a lightning arrestor on the antenna cable.
Yeah.
Either you've got to have lightning protection on the antenna cable, or you need a surge protector and a lightning protector on the actual Ethernet cable.
And that range is limited when you have things that interfere with it. If you're in a house, you're talking about walls.
Right.
All kinds of things in your walls, probably it's slowing down the actual signal. So that 15-mile range, it's great as long as you have nothing in between the two devices. But you likely do, especially if you're in your own house. Any other tips and tricks before anybody attempts to do this? What should they do after they set this up? Should they be backing up settings or what?
Okay, so yeah, one of the nice things about DDWRT is you can export all of your settings. So if you come under the administration menu, there's a backup tab here. And this backup tab will allow you to back up the settings in the router. So once you've got it set up, if you want to make sure that, you know, somebody doesn't push the reset button on it and reset all the settings and then you have to set this up again, you can back this up to a file that then you can restore. However, it's really important with DDWRT to only restore the backup to the exact same router revision and hardware and software of DDWRT.
So that's why you pretty much buy the same router everywhere. You buy
right.
like 10
so
of them.
That's why I had these two, because I have 10 of these. And I just went, I'll just take two of these and use it for this demonstration.
So for that point, though, but you can take the backup that you made for one, put it on the other. You have to tweak some settings.
Right. You might have to change the IP or the client SSID or code, but it's all ready to go.
I mean, you'll be surprised how often people hit that reset button and mess up things.
Yes.
Definitely back it up. I have my backup in Dropbox just in case something goes wrong, because something might go wrong.
With DDWRT, you can disable the reset button.
Oh, well, I should do that, too.
If it's in a public area, it's a good idea to do that. Somebody mentioned virtual access points, and one of the issues of virtual access points is that you are still sharing the same wireless bandwidth. Mm-hmm. So, like, we're using some virtual access points here at Twit, but that means that if you're connected to one of them, you're still using the same bandwidth and performance of the wireless network. So it doesn't increase your speed at all. It just helps you divide them into, like, a guest network or another subnetwork.
I think that pretty much does it for us on this project, right?
Right. So we're plugged in here. One of the things you want to do is take your remote access point and then pull up. You can just check and see if you can access the internet, because what will happen is your DHCP server from your router will pass through to the LAN ports and the wireless on the other side.
Okay.
So you'll be able to plug in your PlayStation on Ethernet, boot it up, it'll find the internet, everything will work great. If you want to confirm that, you can open up a little command prompt and then try to ping the main unit from there. So we've set this main unit up as 192.168.1.251.
Do you normally label all your stuff? Because this is actually really useful when you're doing things like this.
I normally label it all because you set this up once, and then you kind of forget about it. So, you know, it was working, but now maybe it's not working. Maybe you moved. Maybe you want to get back in and change that code.
You're
going to want to remember that.
They look the same. I mean, that's something you mix up. Like, I have Evernote and things for this, but that's actually a silly little easy tip. Do yourself a favor. Label what's going on with your routers.
Yeah, and your main access point or your main bridge access point can work with multiple remote bridges. So if you've got a central location in your house where your internet comes in, and then you've got two locations or three locations that you want to have that extended to, you can get two or three of these and pair them to the one unit here.
Got it.
And then you're still on a separate band than your regular Wi-Fi for your client devices, but they will share the overall bandwidth of this unit.
So if you live in a mansion, you can be expanding like crazy.
Yeah.
So we got you pinged it.
So it pinged it, and one of the things you might want to do is come in here, and on Windows, if you do -T, it means to ping forever. And so you can leave this up and running. We're connected to the remote unit over a direct wired connection, and we're pinging the main unit that's completely away from it. And you just want to set this up and let it run for maybe 20 minutes or 30 minutes. Make sure there's no lost packets or very long lag times. And when you come back in and hit Control C at the end, you'll get a little summary that 24 packets were sent, 24 received, lost zero. So that's really what you want. If you're getting any loss, you want to check your signal strength. So you can go under the status, wireless, and then go back down and make sure that you've got good signal strength down here. If this is anywhere under 20 or 30%, you're going to slow down to a real slow speed. So instead of being at 450, you might be at 6 or 1. And then your signal quality, if this is really low, it means the devices are too far apart.
And so is this where we would need directional
antenna? Is where you would need to go, okay, I was hoping I could make it out to the shop from the shop, you know, from your garage to your shop on your property. And maybe it might almost work, but the building's a little different. It would work if it's outside, but it won't work if it's inside. So then you can go and spend the money on the directional
antenna.
Or
arguably you're going to have a conversation with somebody very far away. It's like, move the remote closer, slightly over to the left, and it might work.
Sometimes it helps to just move it upstairs in the house if it's two stories, put it up by a window. You know, for real low cost, I've had, in the places I've rented, I've had to do this where I had to link garage or other rooms together without wiring. And you found that, like, you know, putting one on top of the refrigerator seemed to be the best location.
Well, where else would you put it?
Yeah,
on the toaster?
So.
That's just silly, Russell. I think that pretty much does it. We got it set up. We got our project. It's a crazy idea, but it works. And it's a lot cheaper than, again, hiring Russell. Russell's a fantastic guy, but you don't have to pay him.
No.
Well, Russell, if people wanted to find you on the internet.
Yes.
And you wanted them to find you on the internet.
And I wanted me to find them on the internet.
That's the important part. Well, what would they do? How could they find you?
Well, my Twitter is at Exphose, which is at E-X-P-H-O-S-E. I usually just publicize my photo site and my non-IT business because I'm quite busy with my clients on Twit.
Now, where are you in your profile picture? It looks like you're on a rock.
I am in a place called Goblin Valley State Park in Utah.
It's very zen.
Yes.
Have you set up Wi-Fi in there?
I have not set up Wi-Fi
in there. Why not?
There's barely 1X Verizon coverage one bar in there. So
I'm shocked you haven't set up a mesh network that goes out that far, because Russell is flat out a genius. He can do this stuff in his sleep. And I don't actually, I think that's quite possible because Russell's insane.
Probably.
We do this show all the time, every Thursday at 3 o'clock on live.twit.tv. And if you wanted to get show notes about this episode, because this episode's really, really dense, go to twit.tv/KH. Lots of notes there, full-on explanations.
And the episode for DDWRT.
That's true, too. That's got a repository of all our episodes. If you wanted to see how to set up DDWRT on pretty much any router, also available there. I think that does it for us. And now that you know how to set up this wacky project, go do it. You bother me, kid.